Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. "No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit." I mean, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. Keep that bitch on your face. Shit, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She's like you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, I'm fucking, let's go across the street.
Yeah, who got
look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did, by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we'll try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Okay, this morning we're going to be talking about Doghouse Industries, but I want to play back... take something from the Rural Energy Foundation, which is now Solar Now in Uganda, and take it, because part of what they do is what we'll be doing. So let me replay part of this audio again.
Solar Sister's story is centered around the stories of our women entrepreneurs. So many kinds of women from all backgrounds and starting points have joined the Solar Sister. Our goal is to support them to create businesses that improve their family's life and contribute to community development. One of these women is Juliet Mullen. Juliet has worked hard all her life farming, selling crops, and keeping the house for her husband and children. After decades of cooking over smoke fires and the laborious task of collecting wood, Juliet was suffering with health problems. And with no access to electricity, she also had to pay for kerosene and searchlight batteries. She found herself struggling to keep the family going and pay for her grandchildren to go to school. Her teenager granddaughter Rita was finishing primary school and dreamed of going to secondary school. In 2013, Juliet joined the Solar Sister, kicked off her clean energy business and brought in some extra income. She also saved the money because she no longer paid for kerosene or batteries. With this small boost, she could pay school fees and take care of basic health needs. This story is important because it shows how Solar Sister is much more than just solar light. Each solar light, each clean stove, transforms the household, improving family health, children's education, women's status, and control over resources, not to mention easing the environmental devastation that the wood stove and kerosene lamps cause. It's good for everyone. So far, we have trained and supported over 3,000 entrepreneurs like Juliet. These entrepreneurs have reached over 1 million people in Uganda, Nigeria, and Tanzania with clean energy solutions. We are always trying to improve our model and reach more people through affordable lights and stores. But the problem is huge, and there is a lot of work to do. There are still 600 million Africans living without electricity. Solar Sister was created to support African women to both improve their own economic development and to bring sustainable energy solutions to their communities. We need your help to accomplish our plans to reach 5 times as many people with clean energy solutions. Join our women driving clean energy revolution.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this, because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness, because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is, these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops.
We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to...
You know what? I was doing a whole rant, and I had my cell phone mute. Delmar, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I know what happened.
Okay. Right. I did a whole rant and forgot I had my cell phone mute. Let me repeat part of what I said. With the Rural Energy Foundation, they basically introduce rural Africans on how they can electrify their homes with light and to do anything. Run a barbershop, lighting for the home. People can buy flat screen TVs all through solar energy. The way they did it is they had mobile demonstration units that went out. And you can see this on, Facebook, YouTube. They had bikes and bikes with little trailers on them, and they would take out the little portable demonstrations I imagine they still do the same thing. They're not the only people that do that. Africa has a lot of innovative ideas on marketing, on how to reach their market. So a couple of hours ago, Delmar and I were speaking about dog houses. And then, Delmar, I'll let you chime in on this one, because we were looking at how we can get into certain markets, like larger markets, you know, Jacksonville or what have you. Share with us how we can do this through tailgating.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you clear.
Well, the basis of the idea we start talking about, well, we've been working on talking about building dog houses for several days. But as we thought about it, and as I thought about it, we talked about marketing the dog house we built. And so that thought led to the acknowledgement that in this country, the pet food industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. We talked about how on TV, they advertise all the time that you love them like family, you treat them like family, until you spend all kind of big money, again, on their pet animals, particularly dogs. So that discussion went to why not build dog houses and design it with such attractiveness that these owners will actually buy these dog houses. So we went from that thought to comparing what was needed to build a dog house versus a tiny house or a multi-shack. And though in the case of the multi-shack, we had to have a certain amount of space. And in the process of the dog house, we talk about you could do that in the kitchen. So we went from that dog to we could actually build a dog house in the back of a truck, pick our truck, tailgate.
Right.
And so that went to the whole idea of tailgate marketing strategy. And we could actually build a dog house from scratch. Film the whole thing, put it on the market, sell it, and deliver it all from one day. So
right. That's
the type of things out there.
And I like that term that you put out there, man. Player, I had to add it into my notes. Tailgate marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for people who don't have a fixed brick-and-mortar location, that's okay. Tailgate marketing, that works, I would say, anywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
So hold on, I'm putting that in that term in there. Tailgate marketing.
And you can expand that means to not just be a pickup truck, but you have to use the trunk of your car. Point is mobile.
Right.
And people been doing it before. People pull up somewhere, open up the trunk, and I know during the spring, on the Mother's Day, in the place where I live, The coins will be lined up with folks out there, all kind of gifts that people buy during that time, and most of them are selling that stuff out of the back of their car, on the truck.
Well, you know, I know a guy, I knew other guy, rather. He would pull up to the gas station, what a gas station near my house at the time, and at the Esso gas station and or Exxon gas station. And during rush hour, you know, people getting gas going their way to work or what have you. And, man, he had a station wagon. And man, if you needed socks, I mean, you name it, he had it in that station wagon.
Yeah.
And he made a pretty good and I guess that's, you can call that tailgate marketing.
Yeah, that's right. Same idea, right.
And he had absolutely no competition at all.
And the thing about that kind of stuff, it's impulse buying. When people see
right.
it, they want it, they buy it right there. Go on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
In case of the tailgate, as far as the doghouses, we stream that. We'll be saving the challenge we pursue to make sure that people see it. Use some of the
right.
examples that are already working. Like I say, you talk about building something and market it and delivering it all within hours, and the viewer can see it being done, which is incentive. They say, well, I can order this thing tomorrow, whatever, and get delivered tomorrow, whatever.
Right. Now, I'm up here. The video that I'm watching on YouTube is Rural Energy Foundation. African villages lit up by solar power. So I'm looking at their marketing. All right, so this guy, Chris Dawa, I think his name is, he rolls into town on a motorcycle, a moped or something like that. And he's got his little solar demonstration kit with him. And then he sets up, because I'm looking at, this could be a tent. It's open air. It's something that we can make pretty easy. And he's got about 25 or maybe 30 people that are, I mean, for the demonstration where, you know, he does solar barbering, seeing, you know, solar lighting, charging cell phones. And there are other companies. Now, the name of the company today is Solar Now, but there's B-Box Solar out of East Africa. There's Solar Sister, we play the audio of them. So that same thing is, I mean, with tailgating. Oh, and by the way, I ran the idea past Robin. So Robin's on board. He's out in Seattle, Washington. And then I ran the idea past Connie Beasley. He's in North Carolina. So then I'm in Florida. So we've got three or four locations that people have the resources already in their neck of the woods. Now, one idea that came from Beasley was, make the announcements to, boots on the ground churches and then, partner with them as well. So, tailgate concept makes it allows us to plan things like right now, because all you need is if you don't have a car or a pickup truck, as you stated earlier when we were speaking offline, Delmar, is those things could be rented.
Okay.
Now here's an idea that Beasley came up with. Like with one of the community colleges that he turned me on to a couple of weeks ago, is we can, instead of disassembling the demo, okay, we can do an auction of what we built, and then people can come and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's another particular strategy. I imagine, depending on, you know, wherever the location is, we can either have it ready for pickup during the auction, or we can do for other projects where it wouldn't be any problem to disassemble or deconstruct, as they call it, or have some, the IKEA, have it already packed and ready to go so people can see the demonstration, and then if they want to buy their own, we have a kit already where they can just pick it up, place it in their car, van, U-Haul, and then haul it off, and then they can assemble it on their own.
Right.
We do have interest in at least three locations already. And everybody's familiar with tailgating. So it seems like a pretty viable way to go. Anything else you want to add in, Delmar?
You remember back in the day when the, you might say, well-developed neighborhood, pretty much white people.
Uh-huh.
Black farmer would come through there with a pickup truck or a wagon, mule wagon or something, with all his veggies on there. He'd come down the street, it's like day, probably Saturday morning.
Uh-huh.
And people come out there and buy all that fresh stuff for him.
Oh, you know what? At my grandparents' house, which is still in the family, in New Orleans, I remember that. I forgot what day of the week it was, but yeah. They even have that in Baltimore. I don't know if they still have it, but last I remember, they would come. He would have his horse or mule or whatever, and mm-hmm. have all those fresh vegetables, and they would buy it.
Right. Is that
I remember that.
The World Tailgate.
You know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Talk about organic.
Yeah,
that was the original Whole Foods.
That's right.
And they would bring it directly. Yeah, I remember being right in front of my grandparents' house, and they would. You know, and when they finish with that particular block, they just go on to the next block, and of course they get everybody. You know, that is that's tailgating, and they didn't have any competition.
I reference that to show how far the whole idea goes back, not new.
Right.
Yeah, that's a call here.
Oh, what was that, Delmar? Okay, he's on. Let's take a call. I'll be working on a doghouse this weekend. And I'll take some videos on what I complete over the weekend, because I got to get the rest of the materials for it. But, if you are interested and being at one of our boots on the ground, tailgate mobile crew, where we'll be building, 61, you can call live while we're on the air, 619-768-2945. That's 619-768-2945. Or call me at the 425-520-0605.
That's 425. I'm back. Go ahead.
0605. So those are numbers if you're interested in that in your neck of the woods. Because this is a great idea rolling in into the new year of 2024.
Yeah, definitely so.
Yeah. Because like I say, you don't even have to own a car, or truck, or whatever. These things can be rented. I mean, you got plenty of places where you rent or you got a friend or whatever. So, anyway, more to that coming next week. Anything, Delmar, you want to put out to your website or when it will be online or be available for people?
I'm still working on that. That's what I said earlier. I still got to get that finalized. So working on that. I probably, no doubt, late next week. Yeah, it's Friday, so.
Okay. All
yep.
right. So we'll be, as we shore up this idea over the weekend, because like I say, tomorrow, I'll be building at least the first part of a doghouse. I'm doing a mobile doghouse. So, but Monday morning we'll be able to roll out things because, like I said, we have interest already, at least in two markets here in Florida. And let's see. Yeah, Seattle, Washington. And oh, we'll roll it out next week, even including your neck of the woods, Delmar.
Uh-huh.
You know what, Chicago, between you and me, we know plenty of people in Chicago. I'm going to call Reba. And one other person I know up there in Chicago, not present, but somebody else. And, yeah, because, it's a no-brainer concept, tailgating.
Yes, sir.
So hopefully, you know what, by next Friday, we should have something going here that can generate mm-hmm. some type of revenue for people. So on that note, Gilmar, this is the first day of December, and
yes,
it's a Friday, and it's a nice, the temperature is nice down where I'm at right now. So I'm going to log off for today. I'll be talking with you later. Today, everyone have a good rest of the day and great weekend.
Okay, have a good day.